What is good parenting? Is there a way to raise children that are emotionally secure but also independent? One person's firm boundaries can be another's harsh approach. You might think you're nurturing and others might say you're coddling. Well, what do you think is the most important thing you can do to support your child through life? And how has it worked out for you and your family? Tell us about it on Facebook. Psychiatrist Daniel Siegel says there's one crucial thing we need to do to raise kids who can lead happy and healthy and fulfilling lives. Professor Daniel Siegel, welcome to Life Matters.
Hilary, thanks for having me. It's great to be here.
Now, before we talk about this magical element of parenting, what are we looking for when we talk about a happy child? What might that look like in adolescence or young adulthood?
Well, what you're looking for is a child or a teen or a young adult who's feeling really secure in who they are and kind and compassionate, not only towards their friends and family, but even toward their inner life. So there's a sense that they're joyful and filled with a desire to connect with other people and be of service to other people.
I don't know many people who tick every single one of those boxes. I know lots of lovely people, but that sounds like an ideal. Is that achievable?
Well, you know, the research is very interesting. When we do what you can simply call showing up for our kids, which you can look at as how a parent connects deeply with their child in the early years of life and then through their elementary school years and then into their adolescence, the research shows they will have these qualities. They may not be that way all the time because none of us are perfect, not even as parents, even when we write books on this, but we can have a direction on how to be. And those qualities are, in fact, what research shows people develop when they have something called secure attachment.
And so what do we need to do to foster this secure attachment? Showing up sounds very basic. Break it down for us a bit.
Well, there are three basic S's that give you the fourth S of security, and they are being safe, they are being seen, and they are being soothed, where when you look at each of the S's, as a parent, if you're listening to us, these are things that if you're not doing them now, you can learn how to do them. And that while we remember there's no such thing as perfect parenting, when you have a view of these S's, these basic four S's essentially of showing up, you can provide your child with reconnection when things don't go as well as you'd like, and then have a direction in which you're trying to work with your parenting as you connect with your child.
And we'll break down those four S's in a moment and go into a bit more detail. But let's talk about the evidence. What research are you drawing on, Daniel Siegel?
So the research is called Attachment Theory and Research. And what it is for about the last, 50 years or so half a century, we've had systematic studies of how parents across the globe interact with their children. And then we study how does this infant or toddler, how does the elementary school child, how does the teen, and now even a colleague of mine, Alan Stroh in Minnesota in the United States, has shown that now these little kids who are now in their 40s, how they grew up and then how they turned out as adults in the middle of their lives.
And is it subjective? I mean, how do you test for emotional security?
Well, there's very formal tests that we could go through the details of them, but essentially what it is we study parent-child interactions in the first year of life by doing home visits. Then we do a very systematized study called the infant strange situation, which is basically putting an infant who's about 12 months of age in an unusual situation. It's strange, so it's called the strange situation. And you have the parent separate for a few minutes and then come back in different setups. And then you study how the child and parent interact on the reunion. And so you can show that if there's a certain pattern at 12 months of age, that there's a number of things that go along with that. One is when a child develops kindness and compassion and basically can have mutually rewarding relationships with others, learns how to meet their intellectual potential, can be aware of their emotions and communicate them well and regulate them. All of that is essentially social and emotional intelligence. When they have those things, they've had what's called secure attachment, and you can show that that was present at 12 months of age. And then there are various forms of measuring the non-secure forms of attachment, which are called avoidant or ambivalent, and then study how those children have various ways that they're not so kind to other kids, or they have trouble regulating their emotions and tend to feel nervous about things, or in one form of insecure attachment, they actually can fragment if they've been having really difficult times early on. And then what we do is we can actually assess that in childhood, see how that impairs or promotes well-being in adolescence. And then even, as we said, study these kids into adolescence into their 40s and show that the patterns of ways of interacting with yourself and others are directly shaped by your attachment to your primary caregiver.
And it was really comforting to read that in that strange room situation, the majority of babies were kind of okay when the parent left and happy to see them come back, but settle quickly back into play. And that was secure attachment. And then there were a few that fell into these sad other categories where they would get really upset when the parent returned, or really upset when the parent left, or not know how to deal with the parent. Were they upset? Were they angry? Were they detached, so that there's obviously reactions that you don't want to see in a child and that can lead to poorer life outcomes, as you mentioned. How do you avoid that? How do you get in those crucial early years and form that secure feeling of attachment? What does it look like on a day-to-day level?
Yeah, exactly. Well, Hillary, thank you. You're summarizing it so beautifully. You know, when my student, now my co-author, Tina Payne Bryson, and I wrote The Power of Showing Up, we wanted parents to be able to ask that exact question. How can I know what the science says, which is what we've just summarized, and then how can I know what I can do as a parent? So the first thing to say that's quite a remarkable finding from the research done across cultures with thousands and thousands of parents is the following amazing finding. So the first thing we said is secure attachment is not a guarantee, but it's this really important gift we can give our children that keeps on giving because they learn how to connect with other people and with themselves in a very positive way. So that's the first thing. The second thing is to address the question you're asking, what do we know from the science is what you can do as a parent? So amazingly, what we know is that it is not what happened to you that makes the biggest difference. It's actually something that surprised the researchers. And when I learned about this, it transformed how I approached being a therapist, how I approached being a dad, how I approached being an educator. And it's this following finding. It's not what happened to you that matters the most. It's how you've made sense of how your early experiences affected you, how you make sense of your life, so that if someone had a really, really painful childhood, but took the time to reflect on those experiences and ask the questions, what actually happened to me, number one, number two, how did I adapt to what happened to me? And then number three, how are those experiences and adaptations still impacting me now as an adult and as a parent? And when you reflect inwardly like that, the research is very clear, you can free yourself up to basically show up for your kid in these S's we can talk about. But when parents have not done that, and they've been in the one-third to a little under a half of the population in many countries that have what are called insecure attachment, you know, then you develop these adult forms of insecurity, which luckily can change across your lifespan. So you can be in your 90s and transform an insecure adult status to security so you can show up for your kids or your grandkids or, in one case, your great-grandkids.
That is excellent news. We're talking with Daniel Siegel, clinical professor of psychiatry and author, co-author of The Power of Showing Up. And let's break down those S's. What would a parenting book be without alliteration, Daniel, I wonder? The safe one. How do you raise a child that feels emotionally safe?
Yes. So safety has two components to it. So one is, of course, as attachment figures, we're mammals, we're also primates, but we as human beings are there to protect our children from harm. And that's a pretty straightforward one. The second part of being safe as a kid is often not spoken about by adults, but it's that we are not the source of terror for our children? And if we are, we quickly make a repair, which means we reconnect after blowing up and yelling, or if we come home drunk and we scare our kids, when we're sober, we come back and apologize and we try to reduce these times when we may have been terrifying to our children. Because the problem with you as an attachment figure scaring your kids and not making a reconnection is that two networks in your child's brain are activated. One says, go toward my attachment figure to be protected. The other is, go away from the source of terror. So if you, as the attachment figure, are the source of terror, the child's brain cannot resolve that fear. There's one network that says go toward you, the other says go away from you, and this is where they have no organized approach. So it's called disorganized attachment, and sadly, it has the most concerning outcomes. It's treatable clinically, because there is a clinical condition that is the outcome of this form of attachment called dissociation, where your mind fragments, especially under stress. And the good news is that's a treatable condition. And the even better news is it's a preventable form of attachment, so that you can understand why parents act this way, support the parents in making sense of their own unresolved trauma and loss. And then in resolving it, they then will not have children who are likely to have a disorganized attachment with them if they don't resolve those losses or traumas themselves.
Well, Danielle, I want to quickly look at this idea of repair, because I think it goes to the heart of a question that arises for me when reading your book. Some people will think, if I go back to my child and apologize to them, that's being wishy-washy. I'm not being firm in my setting of boundaries and my parenting style. If I've blown up at them, is it then okay to make a change in how I approach them? What's your response to that idea?
Well, exactly. Well, this is a great question. Very briefly, to address this question, it's best to finish up those S's. You know, we are seen, meaning our inner life is known by our parents, so they see our feelings and our reactions to things. So if you have made, let's say, a moment in your parenting where you're yelling and your child feels frightened, you see that. And then this next S is soothed. And what you want to do is try to soothe their distress. So the way you make a repair so that you are providing the fourth S of security, this overall sense that, hey, even if things get rough, I've learned that my parent will come back to me and say, I'm really sorry for how I was yelling and screaming at your brother or your other parent or you, or other even worse things, you know, hitting kids or doing other really not nice things to them that can terrify them, that unfortunately happen a lot. When you make a reconnection, this repair we're talking about, it teaches your child that you are human, that you can recognize that things don't always go the way we want. There's no such thing as perfect parenting. You make a reconnection, and quite the opposite of making your child, you know, wishy-washy or you looking like you're weak, you are strong, and you're teaching your child essentially resilience, because out of these ruptures and misalignments, when you take the time to make a reconnection, apologize if it was really terrifying for your child, reconnect with them, it's exactly how they learn to be resilient and secure, because they know, hey, when things get tough, my parent actually, she gets herself together, he gets himself together, they come back to me and they say, whoa, what just happened was not nice. I didn't do it the way I want to do it. Take two. Let me try it again. And I'm basically teaching my child when I do that, that we can be aware of our behavior, know how we'd like to be, and realize as humans, we don't always do what we intend to do.
And Daniel,
but you
we've
can come
got a,
back and make a repair.
We've got a couple of minutes left with you. I want to quickly ask about this internal toolkit, the calming, self-soothing toolkit that you recommend parents help children develop. What does that look like?
Well, this is exactly it, Hillary. You know, this is the fun thing about this whole approach. You know, what Tina and I really want to convey in our work is that discipline means to teach, and you're teaching the skill of this internal toolkit you're referring to. And basically, if you see your parenting, even the hard moments that sometimes we interpret as burdens and, oh my God, this is so difficult. It is difficult for sure. But some of those most difficult moments are actually the best opportunities we have to teach this internal toolkit. What do we mean? You are teaching your child to be aware of their feelings, be aware of what has meaning for them, because emotion and meaning go hand in hand in the brain, and you're teaching them to be aware of that. In that insight that you're teaching, that's the internal part, you're teaching them too that other people have an inner world. We call it mind sight. You see the mind, and they realize they can empathically and compassionately then connect with other people. And then as you're teaching them to do that, you're also teaching them the skill of making a soothing interaction with others to help others, but even to soothe themselves. So here's basically the secret sauce. You, in your keeping your child safe, in seeing them and soothing them and providing this model of security, are teaching them that they too can stay with uncomfortable feelings, know it internally. This is the internal toolkit. And then when they do that, they learn how to take your experience of soothing them and learn how to soothe themselves. And that is a gift that keeps on giving their whole lives.
Let's talk about one example you raised just quickly in the book, the bath plug moment. So the child freaks out when you pull out the bath plug and have to drain the water. And the options seem to be you put the plug back in and go, it's okay, I won't take it out. You take the plug out and tell them to deal with it. What's the third option?
Well, the third option is to really use your mindset skills. That is to say to your child, you know, it is time to go to bed and time to get out of the bath. I see how frustrated you are because you were so excited to stay in the bath and play with your toys. I'm excited too. And now it's time to go to bed. So what you're doing is you're staying with their feelings, connecting first, and then redirecting their behavior. With parents that just say, get out, you know, they're not teaching these mindset inner tools. And with parents who just let the kids stay in the bath the whole night long because they're afraid of setting boundaries, that's actually not teaching your child tools too. Because with this third approach we're mentioning, what you're saying is, hey, I see your frustration. I know what time it is. I can also see your excitement to keep on playing with your toys. We take a deep breath. I'm with you with your feelings, but I'm able to help you modify your behavior. So I say yes to your feelings and let me help you redirect your behavior toward bed.
Are there going to be moments where you have to say, I'm just putting my foot down now and you have to get out of that bath?
Yeah, you can definitely do that. While also, it's amazing when you learn the skill of doing this, you can also say, you know, I see how frustrating this for you as you're taking them out of the bath. And especially, listen, if there's anything that's endangering your child, like they're running into the street, you don't say, hey, oh, I notice how excited you are to run in the street and get run over by a truck. No, you grab them so they don't get run over by a truck. So this is not permissive parenting that we're talking about. This is secure attachment, which allows you to modify behavior as needed in an emergency for sure, and then talk about the internal world of your child, because this is where safety comes first. Seeing them and soothing them is also there in the S's. And when they have that, and when they're not there exactly as you'd like them to be, you make a repair and reconnection. That's how security is developed.
It's immensely comforting to know that the repair is not only necessary, but achievable. Daniel Siegel, thank you so much for joining us on Life Matters today.
An honor. Thank you for having me.
Daniel's the co-author of The Power of Showing Up with Tina Payne Bryson. He's a clinical professor of psychiatry at UCLA School of Medicine. You're listening to Life Matters here on RN.